You're listening to the Elephant in the Room Property Podcast, where the big things that never get talked about actually get talked about. I'm Veronica Morgan, real estate agent, buyer's agent, and co-host of Foxtel's Location, Location, Location Australia.
And I'm Chris Bates, financial planner, mortgage broker, and wealth coach.
And together, we're going to uncover who's really making the decisions when you buy a property.
This episode is a little bit different, as it's actually part two of a conversation we had with Bryce Holdaway, one of Australia's biggest property podcasters and Veronica's TV co-host. This chat is a real bonus, as it came after we'd actually finished talking about escaping from the city. We uncovered so much gold, we actually knew we had to release this as a separate episode. Keep listening to hear what Bryce has to say about property spruikers. And he also has one big surprising confession.
I've been in meetings with people who are in control of their client's destiny, where they're making seven figures from referral fees for making recommendations for property that the three of us know is going to send the client on a path to nowhere.
Then stick around for this week's Property Dumbo. As always, it's a cracker.
Before we get started, everything we talk about on this podcast is general in nature and should never be considered to be personal financial advice. If you're looking to get advice, please seek the help of a licensed financial advisor or buyer's agent. They will tailor and document their advice to your personal circumstances. Now let's get cracking.
You know, Chris, when I get started talking with Bryce, we can go for hours. And when we added you to the mix, I thought we'd never all shut up. And it was when I listened to this original recording that I realised we needed to break the episode into two parts. Now, if you haven't listened to our first episode with Bryce, please go back to episode 38 and have a listen. It serves as an excellent guide for anyone contemplating a sea change or a tree change, or even if you're thinking about moving to another city. But this second part of the interview got really juicy, and I didn't want to run the risk of anybody tuning out before hearing it. We really got into this whole issue about free advice and what it really costs property buyers. So here goes.
Thanks, Bryce. Appreciate you being here.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let's just quickly talk about what your podcast is all about because, you know, I've listened to it. I think I've listened to nearly all of the 200 episodes, you know, when you go into...
Is that true?
Well, I reckon three quarters I've probably listened to. I'm a dedicated fan.
Wow.
Some of them, honestly, they do bang on about footy just a bit too much for me. The 15, you know,
get lots of people writing in about that. So the biggest challenge I have on my podcast is I'm born in 1975. My parents have been married for 50 years. I am quintessential middle class suburban, like very sheltered. You saw that. I get all my culture from you, Ronnie. For
he was very sheltered.
So I say things that I accidentally discriminate. Right. So. So I get people writing to me saying, you know, that's the biggest challenge for me because I don't pretend to be anything that I'm not.
Yeah.
It's me and Ben being buffheads, talking about footy. Lots of people writing saying, we don't like the banter at the beginning. It's like, well, that's okay, but you got to take the good with the bad because that's how we get a bit of a rhythm, get a bit of cadence up on what we're doing.
Yeah.
Ben and I are the odd couple. We're so different, but it works. So.
How many listeners are up to, you know, for our listeners here, we've gone over about 500 to 600 an episode, which is, you know, we're pretty happy and thank you all our listeners.
Yeah. I mean,
we love you all.
I mean, how was that kind of, how long does it take for you or what was your kind of growth?
When we got 11,000 downloads, I can tell you that we seriously high-fived.
Well, we got that as well, so
yep.
Let's get a high-five in.
You guys should like to do that. And I'm not fluffing your pillows. You guys, there's so many podcasts out there and you guys are offering something that gives people an opportunity to get something different, which I think is great. So I think your listener base should really grow, and I've got my team listening to it as well. But so the answer to that question is we've got about 3.7 million downloads.
Wow.
Which
wow.
is amazing.
Epic.
Yeah.
And we get up to 50,000 a week listen, and we're on Jetstar, Qantas, we do some stuff with realestate.com and the Today Show. So that certainly helps with that awareness of what we're doing.
Yeah.
But so it's about 18 and a half, just doing the maths, it's about 20,000 listens roughly per episode. Is that kind of right?
Oh, more, up to 50,000 for some.
Yeah,
for some.
Yeah. Mm. On it. Yeah, okay, right, wow.
Yeah, but our formula is really simple, right? We just give everything we got, right?
Mm.
And the idea is really simple. That we saw I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I started out as a property spruiker. Back in 98, I was in Perth, and I was so loved property, investing in property. My life was changed when I watched an episode of the Midday Show with Ray Martin, and Jan Summers got up with a whiteboard and a texter and said, you should buy a property, you get some tax back, you get a refund, and it pays for itself. And I can still remember it now. It was like the biggest epiphany going, why isn't everyone doing this? And I just came on a mission to try and find out as much as I could. But what it did is it took me down the brand new path, right? But I was an enthusiastic amateur. It's all I knew. I can look all those clients in the eye now because they've all made money because it was back in 98. But now once I know more, I can't get involved in that. So,
I mean, while you're there, because that's actually a really interesting point. You know, because I've been like 100% focused on this space for maybe 7 years now, and I've kind of got a bit of a cross of who's kind of all the good guys and the bad guys and the good girls and the bad girls.
See, that's where I would have gotten in trouble. I would have gone just the good guys, and then yeah. I would get everyone running and say, well, what about the good girls? And I don't mean it.
I'm happy to be called a guy. Yeah, yeah.
But you're smarter than I am. Yeah. So.
You know, I'm sitting on two fences. One, I see the impact and the damage that they make, and you know the results of what mis-selling causes. Mm. And then I also understand from a financial advice point of view how much that and the opportunity cost of how much that decision has actually changed someone's life.
Yeah.
And also the hurt and the stress and the, you know, potentially marriage, and there's all these sort of things that come out of the results of someone just mis-selling a property.
Mm.
And then I was chatting with a client, and he's on a bit of a journey. He's, you know, he's done his little developments, and he's reading lots of books. You know, he's like listening to your podcast. He's, you know, he's pretty much, and he's following all the good guys and girls. he made a really interesting point. He said, because he mentioned someone, I said, oh yeah, like, you know, positive cash flow. You know, he's a young guy, kind of out there. And I said, look, and he goes, but I think that he, you know, I just don't think he doesn't really realize. He's a bit ignorant to it. I don't think it's a conscious thing. And so, do you think that's a lot of these people out there are actually? Do you reckon they're consciously knowing that they're actually spruiking, or do you actually think and they're actually selling flawed strategies, or do you actually just think they just don't know?
So I won't comment specifically on any company, but I was an enthusiastic amateur, right?
Yeah.
I believed that what they were doing was the right thing. So that was 98 to 2004, right? And then I got the epiphany. And then I couldn't do it again, right? So, but I was, anyone who took my advice, I can put my hand on my heart and say, I was not trying to pull the wool over their eyes. Where the lines crossed is if people know and they still see it as a way to. So there's two parts, right? So there's one where there's me, the enthusiastic amateur, and then there's the person who is knows and doesn't care. That's the ultimate, spruiker.
So the young person starting industry, taking down the wrong path, you know, they start seeing money, they don't understand the big picture of what they're doing. But you know, it's quite frustrating because as a broker that, you know, has been in business a long, long time, I quite respected and thought they were very good, and then one of their clients has come to me, and then I found out recently what they actually advised them to kind of invest in. And I kind of traced it back and asked the client, where did they get that property from? It was an introduction. And I was just flabbergasted, you know, because this person was, in my eyes, a very good broker, very respected, and been doing the job a long, long time, and has written a lot of business. He knows. And he's still interested. And so that, to me, that's where it's just quite frustrating.
So I agree, Chris. Yeah. And I've been in meetings with people who are in control of their client's destiny, where they're making seven figures from referral fees for making recommendations for property that the three of us know is going to send the client on a path to nowhere. And I'm trying to talk about my business, and they said to me, so how much referral fee do you pay? And I said, well, I actually don't pay any referral fee. And they just scoff at me. And they said, well, why are we having this conversation? I said, well, because maybe you might be interested in a good outcome for your client, right? Mm. And they're like, mate, I earn an extraordinary amount of money from referral fees.
I have been having this same conversation with planners recently, exactly that. And it's like, Yeah, and that's my thing. I get it. I get it that you're leaving, clip the ticket effectively. I get that that is how you make your money, you know, percentage of funds in under management, right? But aren't you interested in their outcome? Because, you know, there's still going to be a percentage of people that will go off and either buy property themselves under their own steam if that financial planner isn't prepared to give any advice whatsoever or discuss property, but then you've got that other type that will actually help them get into stuff that is shocking.
I mean,
it's scary.
In the financial advice world, it's very scary because
and present company excluded because I know that you're not in that path, but your industry is.
Well, it is, I see it. And so there's very, very few out of 20,000-odd planners out there that understand property.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm talking maybe less than 100, probably. Mm. You know, I can't.
I've been trying to find them.
One of them is actually definitely coming on our podcast very soon, Stuart, who's been on yours, and he gets it.
He
gets it.
And he can tell. But I can tell.
Unfortunately, you mentioned there around that's how, you know, you've got to. I get it. That's how you make money. How you make money in business, though, is keeping your clients happy and giving them amazing outcomes long term. Otherwise, you're just in for a quick buck, and you're not really making money unless you build a sustainable business.
Sadly, in the industry, like we went to a thing recently, and they just got together, and it's how to improve your business, and they're just sitting there talking about their toys. It's like, is that really what business is all about?
Yeah.
How many toys you got? What about your client outcomes? So we got this very in our business. We got this very simple philosophy that the first. Let's call it sale, right? But it's loose. It's not a sale. We're trying to engage a client to help them, but let's just call it a sale. The first sale you make should be the hardest sale you ever make in your business, right? Because if you make a sale, step number one. Step number two, work your tail off to get them a result, step number two. Step number three, create a story about the result that they got. And then step number four is tell people you should never have to sell ever again. Right, because it becomes this circle, right? I've engaged someone, I've provided value, we've created a story around how we provided value, then we go and tell people. And if people had that attitude, we'd be lucky. But unfortunately, people who in the property industry, there's 6 to 10% worth of commissions that are available to project managers. Do the simple maths. On a $500,000 property, they're getting $30,000 to $50,000 worth of commission.
Yep.
On a $500,000 property, I charge $12,970.
Yeah. Yep.
So, but I'm charging it up front and it's in their face and the client goes, well, that's expensive. This guy will do it for free. Mm. No.
Yeah, I know. It's going to cost you one way or the other.
Yeah.
And
you
know, I get a lot of people, you say you get ridiculed and I do too. People look at me, you are so stupid, Veronica. Mm. Why? Because you could take all these kickbacks and you don't.
It's pride over profit.
At the end of the day, I want to sleep at night. I actually have my values. Mm. I would actually rather go broke and have my ethics and what I stand for. I don't really want to go broke, people, so please don't let me go broke.
No.
But I don't want to. But what I believe in and the value and the way that we want to help people is so much more important than that. And I cringe when people say that, but I get people say that to me a lot. Like, you are so dumb, Veronica.
Yeah.
It's just, well.
I mean, I'm a prime candidate for developers, right? Like, so if you're a developer or you're off the plan sales and I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so then they'll see me and then go, wow, he's a financial planner, he's a mortgage broker, this guy must work in property, let's give him a call.
I know you had a recent post on LinkedIn that got so much.
And if any of these people are listening to this, like, don't ever call because it's a really.
I actually think it's a game, mate. You should because what happens is they connect with me on LinkedIn, right? And I'm just want to open the network on LinkedIn, right? So I'll just go, yep. If anyone wants to connect with me, I'll connect with them, right? But I just go. The game here is because I just quickly look at them and go, okay, they're in new builds or whatever. The game for me is, will it be a day? Will it be 2 days? Will it be a week? Or will they say, hi, thanks for networking. It's so great. Is there anything I can do for you? By the way.
Great opportunity. Great opportunity.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, though, they jump on the phone and then they're, you know, they'll either go down the, I've got this amazing thing to sell, or then they'll go down, and we can pay these referral fees.
Mm.
But then one time I got a call and it was a middleman. It was someone who trains brokers to be better about understanding the property market, but then the solution that the brokers will then provide is a new And so,
do they now roll in a real estate license with that? Because that's what's going to be changing in New South Wales.
Well, hopefully
they're all lining up to get licenses so they can take these kickbacks.
But I mean, what was interesting about this guy? I was like, well, hang on a sec. Now you're actually now educating people who are meant to be my colleagues and my other industry professionals to go down a path which, through your experience and who you are, should know better than this. So let's go toe to toe on this, right? And, so he thought, but he's very experienced and he knows the industry and he thought that he knew more than me. And so we went at it and, and this was, it's actually a really, really big thing that I was really frustrating because by the end of it, he went, okay, so new builds are better for this depreciation. And I kind of argued back. And then he went like, you know, it's better for the broker to help with the property decision. I'm like, yeah, but you know, et cetera. And we went back and back and back. We finally got to a point at the end of the conversation. He goes, look, mate, you know more. And this isn't a blow my own trumpet, but you know more than any broker I've spoken to. And obviously I'm not going to be able to convince you. And I said, that doesn't give you the reason or the excuse to go do this. Mm-hmm. And it just frustrates the hell out of me, you know.
It does. And I had someone, a PR girl, ring out to me. She goes, Bryce, love the podcast. We want you to MC our event for us. And I go, do you really love my podcast? Because if you actually listen to my podcast, you'd know that I am not the guy that you need to have MC your event.
I'm not going to say what you want me to do.
So I've heard the exact same thing.
So I said to her, so just for the record, I love what I do and I'm happy to get up there and explain, but if one of the people in the crowd says to me, what do you think about your product? I'm not going to lie. And she goes, does that mean even, she goes, what about if we were to educate you first?
Oh! I'm like, that's fabulous.
That's my response.
So educate is code for brainwash.
Yeah.
So no, I actually said yes to one of these.
Did you?
They asked me to speak at a speaking event, and they said, because we see you like property and you can put in your, do you do any speaking? I was like, yeah, I do speaking. I can do a presentation. I'll do a presentation.
Yeah.
And then I agreed to it. And then the next day I called her back. I said, you don't want me to be doing a presentation at this. I apologise because, it's the complete opposite of what you're going to say.
It's going to go
pear-shaped, that's gold.
I should have done it.
That's funny. You would have got lynched. Well, Bryce, we have covered, I think we've got two podcasts out of this, actually. Yeah.
You just keep going.
Two episodes in one here. We've talked about spruikers and we've talked about sea and tree change in the one episode, which I don't think anybody else could possibly actually manage. So thank you so much for coming along and being part of that. And how will our fabulous listeners find out more about you and what you do?
They already know about him.
Well, they can go to thepropertycouch.com.au and they can check out some episodes. I should have come armed, Ronnie, but I've had you on twice. And the last one we did, we're buying like a pro. I reckon that's where you start.
Oh, that was in February. So if anyone's scrolling through the Property Couch through episodes, through look for February 2018.
Yep.
No, I think it's about time we do a Property Couch and an Elephant in the Room double podcast.
Yeah.
Toe to toe.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's have a little debate. But thanks for having me on, mate.
We didn't even get
to compare notes on what it's like to work with Ronnie. We didn't talk about the escapades of the last
I have to do another one,
time around. But thanks for having me on. You guys are doing a terrific job, and I think what you're doing to educate your listeners is unique, and I certainly encourage you to keep doing it because you don't want to just be another vanilla podcast that's out there. I think you guys are offering some really good stuff. So keep it up. Well done.
Thank you
very much.
Cheers. Thanks for coming.
You can come back anytime.
We really, really appreciate all the reviews that we get from you guys and also the messages that get sent via our website, theelephantintheroom.com.au. We'd love to hear from you as to what you want us to talk about, who you'd like us to interview, but also go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and please write what you loved as well. The more reviews we get, the more people can find us and the more people that we can help. So please, if you love what you're hearing, give us a 5-star review and a note. We love hearing from you.
Every week we hear incredible stories of the dumb things property buyers do. Dumb things that end up costing them a whole lot of money and or creating a whole lot of stress. Mistakes that can be avoided. Who's this week's property dumbo, Veronica?
Well, I've got an example of somebody that got really badly burnt by a property spruiker. Now, when I say badly burnt by a property spruiker, the reality is that we fall for the lines or we get sold to because we're wanting a quick solution normally, you know. So when people have left their retirement plans a little bit too late in life and then they're sitting in a property investment seminar and you hear somebody say, you know what, you haven't left it too late. You can actually make a lot of money in property. Look, here's all the infrastructure going into this area. Here's all the brand new developments. Here's all the graphs and the stats and the research that shows it's a great investment. And guess what? You don't even have to spend a cent of your own money. You know that story, Chris. You've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So when a fellow and his wife who are close to retirement go along to a property investment seminar and they are being – cut that little bit of gap – and they're worried. They're worried that they have left their plans for retirement far too late. They've got $120,000 in their super fund and that's pretty much it. And they're going to be relying on the pension. And then they go along to one of those property investment seminars and someone who says they put, in inverted commas, investors in touch with developers, closed inverted commas, and they tell them that you haven't left it too late. You can use your super. It's not going to cost you anything and you too can become a property investor. So I'm talking about a fellow that I was speaking to who was in exactly this boat. He and his wife had 120 grand in their super. They went along to a Spruker seminar. They were told and sold the story of Townsville. Now, this is back in 2012. So they bought a two-bedroom apartment and 6 years later, they've now retired and they've got a financial planner who's sat down and looked at all this, the figures and said, you know what, your super fund is actually in what's the word? It's
negative non equity.
Yeah, it's non. It's, well, it's not liquid.
Yeah.
And what that means is that they've got a property that they bought in their super fund. They borrowed a lot of money for it, and now the banks are actually jacking up the interest rates, particularly in super self managed super fund lending. The rents have not increased. I think they probably got through a rental, you know, a rental guarantee period. The rents haven't increased, so it's not really paying, and they're no longer putting money into super either because they're retired and the rent is not covering the mortgage and all the costs of owning this property. And that's one bad thing. The other bad thing is that this area hasn't gone up in the way that they were told it would. And in 6 years, they've lost something to the tune of around $90,000 in terms of the actual value of the property. So when you add in the costs plus the 90 grand in equity that they've lost, they're pretty much chewed up within a 6 year period their entire super fund balance. So they've gone from being, you know, worried about their future, their financial future, given that they haven't adequately, you know, prepared for it, to being in a worse off situation and now actually being retired.
Yeah, I mean, it's so many problems with self-managed super funds and property. And I mean, that's why it's really kind of been shut down almost completely now, or the banks have pulled out on the lending side. So, you know, and I think this is just one of many stories, because in 2014, 15, 13, you know, you'd go to property, you know, seminars, property, and there was everywhere you looked was property in self-managed super funds. And so a lot of these people will be coming out of their 5 years interest only. A lot of them will just be now getting closer to retirement. And, you know, they've gone and bought cheap and cheerful properties that, you know, I've got all those elements that you talk about there. So, yeah, I think self-managed super funds and property only works in very few occasions. It generally works when you've got two incomes and two higher incomes, and you've got a lot of equity in there. And that means you can then go and buy a really quality asset, you know, rather than something that's just cheap and cheerful. So.
And also, I imagine, a long time to pay the thing off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're in your 50s and you're looking at a 10-year runway, like, it's just, you know, it's too much risk. You know, you should be, and, you know, one of the benefits of when you're in that age is there's a finish line. You can start taking money out of super and there's tax advantages and it's not a good time. So generally for me in the past, I don't, not anymore, but it would have been people who had over 500 grand in their super fund and were in their 40s. And when you look at the amount of people that have got that, it's very few. So you can see why self-managed super funds and property could be a problem.
Also, I think, and certainly I know when it first became a bit of a fad, and I went along to one of those seminars from a very well-known organisation because I wanted to understand more of it, and I was actually quite shocked at the time as to, A, how little money they said you needed in super, because I'd always thought you needed twice that amount, and also sort of stock that they put up as examples of what the people were buying.
Mm.
And the other side of it that I always thought was a bit shocking was that they did bang on about depreciation. And I'm thinking, hang on, or negative gearing. And I'm thinking, but your tax, you know, I mean, the whole point of a super self-managed super or superannuation at all is it's a tax environment. I mean, I'm using the wrong words here because I'm not a financial planner, but it's a low tax environment, right?
Yeah, you've got to be really careful because it's a trust. You need to be making a profit and you can't negative gear it because you're only going to, there's nothing to offset. So, you know, you're basically just accruing losses.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's quite dangerous because, you know, you might also, you know, break the trustee that you're not looking after the investment strategy. And it can all come, if the ATO are looking at it and see that you're not trying to manage this fund correctly, you know, there's huge penalties because you're meant to be doing it responsibly. So, yeah, there's all these things that have come out, and it was an easy target because Australians love property.
Yeah.
And they hate super because it's been fiddled with and it hasn't performed and they don't really understand it and the high fees and it's a pretty long, you know, that's kind of the belief out there. So then you put these two things together, hating super, oh, actually you can go buy property. It was the perfect kind of ingredients for Spruikers to kind of come into the market and kind of solve everyone's retirement dream with buying property.
Plus, I guess you don't feel like super money is your money until you can get access to it. So therefore it's like, well, I can't use it anyway and I'd like to own more property because we have this sort of concept in this country that all property goes up in value, which it doesn't. Mm. And so that sort of makes it easier too, doesn't it? Because it doesn't feel like it's your money.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're in your 30s and your super fund's just starting out, it seems like it takes forever to go anywhere because it goes from 10,000 to 20,000 to 30,000. It takes many years for it to feel like it's growing, but it's just starting out and it's just slowly compounding. And the amount of time it took to go from zero to 100,000 is not the amount of time it's going to take to go from 100,000 to 200,000.
Mm, yeah.
And so what happens is everyone thinks, oh, I'm never going to have enough because I've only got 100 grand. But what they're forgetting is that compounding over the next 20 years will make a huge difference and you probably will have enough. So I think everyone thinks, well, it's only maybe 100,000. It's going to take 10 years to get to 200,000, but really compounding is just starting to kick in. So that's another problem is that people underestimate how much, you know, their super is going to grow over time.
I tell you what, you know, one of the things that, you know, I find with this whole, it's not just at SMSF, but it very much around this whole idea of investment advice dressed, well, it's really sales pitches dressed up as advice. And I think that's a very scary thing. And, you know, I was listening back to Bryce. I was listening to one of his podcasts recently, one of his episodes, and he's got this great line. He explains that if you're not paying for advice, you are actually the product.
Mm.
So he actually used the example of when Mark Zuckerberg was, you know, facing a Senate inquiry in the US and he was being questioned to say, well, look, if you don't charge anybody to use Facebook, how do you get your money? And he was like, well, advertising, of course. And it's like, oh, right, so the users are actually the product, i.e. the user is the lead, and that is what's being handed to the advertisers on a platter. And so Bryce had drawn this comparison between Spruikers or developers paying Spruikers to deliver you as a lead. And I think that that's what buyers out there need to be very, very aware of, you know, when they're getting advice that's free. It's not free. It's costing you a lot of money because you are the product that's been delivered to their customer.
Yeah, I think with property, I think, you know, everyone likes to get something for free. You know, it's one of our behavioral bias. And, you know, it's the power of free on us. But I think with property, people sometimes go, well, it's okay. It's okay if he's getting a commission. You know, he's introducing you to a developer or, you know, I'm not having to search for it or he's done the research or whatever it is. And, you know, we kind of make these things in our mind where we self-justify why it's okay for them to take a commission. The question is why are they using that developer? Is because they're getting paid that commission. And there's 10 million properties in Australia and they're just referring to a handful of developers that are willing to give them a chunky commission. And so what they're doing is they're only looking at a very few properties out there and they're just going wherever they're going to get their money.
Mm.
So, you know, when you join the dots, you realize it all pretty much falls down. And that's why you need to pay when you're going to get property advice. You need to go and pay someone who looks at the open market, doesn't look at just developers or a small segment or one city. They need to look at things quite, you know, macro level and then really go out in the market and try to find you the right property. And you need to pay for that advice because they're the only one they're getting money from is you. So, yeah, that's kind of the property development conundrum.
Therein lies today's listen.
Yeah.
Now, we want to make you a better elephant rider. So this week's elephant rider training is?
All about kind of high-rise new development. So, you know, I've got lots of clients come to me over the years and, you know, one of the first things we do is always look at what assets they've got. And, you know, I always love to know the story of why they bought it, who they bought it from, you know, how did it happen? But generally speaking, it is kind of going to a seminar and it's generally a friend's bought one and they've introduced a friend that they know. And, you know, there's always a story there if someone sold it to them. But the big problem with, you know, off the plan apartments or just apartments more generally in the newer style is really, you know, for any asset, whenever you're buying any asset in life, the only reason it's worth something is because there's limited supply of it, you know, and there's growing demand. That's what pushes the price up. You know, so when you're thinking about apartments, you've always got to be thinking, can they build more of these? And can they build more of these around where I currently own one? And now the problem is, you know, to build high-rise apartments, they need to be an area that they're zoned to build high-rise apartments. And so that means a pretty good, you know, it's pretty safe to say that they're going to probably build more apartments. And then the problem is that, you know, if they can keep on building new apartments, how does yours stay competitive or better than the new properties? You know, generally speaking, they're going to be newer, they're going to be, you know, and so really there's no scarcity there and they just can keep on building them. Now, not only are they just building new apartments where your apartment is, but they're building them, you know, just down the road at the next train station in the city, you know. So all over the city, they're just building more apartments. So there's literally never going to be a shortage of apartments because as soon as there's more people wanting them, developers are going to keep building them.
And that same principle applies to house and land packages when you've got endless supply of land.
100%. Like if you go on house and land packages, it's the same story, you know. Why is your new estate going to be better than the next new estate? Well, it's not actually because and so you need to have something that's really quite special about your building, and it's very hard to do that in a new development, have something that's really special. Generally, those new developments that are special are the ones that are in old heritage kind of brick buildings, the warehouses that are kind of being converted to new apartments. You know, there's actual scarcity. There's only so many old warehouses that can be converted. The next thing you probably just need to the next thing that's a bit worry is that when you're looking at buying that property, you could be buying it, you know, 2, 3, 4 years prior to it actually getting built. And you're not the only new apartment building that's getting built at that time. So when you go out shopping for one, let's say, there could be 10 developers trying to sell properties at the time. And then if someone else comes to the market next year, and so you have no idea what the future pipeline is going to be and what the future supply is going to be. And so people buying, let's say, Sydney in 2014-15, they had no idea that in 2016, 2017, that there'd be an all-time boom in construction, you know, and 60, 70,000 apartments are going to come to the city in the next few years.
Now, the other thing to consider is uniformity of the product. So when you've got a building that is particularly designed to appeal to investors, not owner-occupiers, that means that there's actually no secondary market and buyers and tenants all have loads of choice, which creates downward pressure on both prices and rents. Now, if you listen back to episode 40 when we spoke to Simon Kustenmacher, and my apologies for the pronunciation, he's a demographer and we talked about the future of our cities and what is happening, why we have a situation where we have oversupply of apartments in cities where we actually have an undersupply of housing. And the answer lies in the wrong type of stock being built. So when you've got a building that's built with full of 1 and 2 bedroom apartments that only appeals to investors because investors are buying because they've been told that's a good idea as opposed to it really is a good idea, fundamentally, as I said, when it comes back to tenants and ongoing sales, there's always loads of other properties all pretty much exactly the same available at any given time, and that is really going to take away from any upward pressure on prices and rents.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point. I mean, the investor market buys 80, 90% of the properties in this area. So the demand, who pushes the price of the property up and who pushes the price of the property down is 100% mainly driven by the investor market. And the problem with that is the investor market is very fickle. It either vests, it goes full throttle, or it goes, you know, puts on the brakes. It comes in and out. It doesn't have this kind of long, steady demand like home buyers. As people get older, they get married and they have kids. So the investor market goes through booms and busts. You know, you can see it in the stock market. And it's the same thing for markets that are with properties that are bought by investors. So from 2014 to 2017, investors went on full throttle. Low interest rates, interest-only loans, big borrowing capacities, and you know, just in a boom. So, but, you know, if you compare that from 2017 till now, investors are on the brakes. You know, the banks are slowing down, the interest rates are going up, can't get interest-only loans. And so if you think about, you know, those markets, if who's buying them, if people are, you know, so the demand really changes and you get much bigger volatility in those markets because they're either on or they're off.
So, and really the biggest future demand for apartments will probably be downsizers who want them to be big and well-appointed, and neither of which are actual hallmarks of investor stock. And these types of apartments are actually scarce. They're scarce now and potentially could be really good investments because people are fighting over them even when the rest of the market isn't performing too well.
Yeah, downsizer apartments are a great investment, but really they're nothing like what's been built over the last 15, 20 years. They're more your Art Deco buildings. They're in more like low rises. They may be around the harbour, say in Sydney, with some views. You know, they're bigger. They're well built. You know, they're more of a community. Like 80, 90% of the people in the building are owner-occupiers. You know, they're not all renters and teenagers or, you know, young adults having parties. They don't want to live anywhere near that. So those apartments, then they're very hard to build them because it's hard to build more apartments in Rose Bay or Fairlight or Kirribilli. There's no land left that they would allow. So they are extremely scarce. And, you know, if you think about who's got money right now, it's all the baby boomers. It's all the people who have had properties in, you know, Sydney and Melbourne, for example, and the price of those properties have doubled or quadrupled over their lifetime. And they're getting to a stage where they don't want to do the lawns every weekend, or they don't want to paint the house, and they don't have the kids anymore. So they're going to put that money somewhere, and it's into kind of scarce apartments, which aren't what we're building.
So summing it up, apartments aren't all bad, but you have to be very, very careful with anything brand new. And the big takeaway here is look for scarcity. If there are too many others available now, or you can see that there's a high chance of more and more being built pretty much exactly the same as the one you're going to buy, then steer clear.
And I guess one other point is really when you look at property, what goes up in value generally, you know, and this is, you know, most of the time is what goes up in value is the land, because the land is what's actually scarce. You can't build any more of it. And then you, because you own the land, you can build a house on it or you can build something on it. So it's the land that gives you the biggest uplift. In saying that, though, there are certain types of housing that does go up in value, like a terrace in Paddington. You know, they're not building anymore, or a Queenslander in Brisbane, or, you know, a Federation house in Melbourne or something like that. So those type of houses do go up plus the land. But generally speaking, it's the land that goes up the most. Now, with apartments, you've got to really, this will really make it kind of, the penny really drops when people think about it and they go, look, if you're buying an apartment, and, you know, there's one big block of land that's been bought by a developer for a lot of money. And then they might go and build 200 or 300 apartments on there. So you really own like 1/200th or 1/300th of that piece of land. And so what you're really buying is very little portion of land. You don't really own it because it's part of a strata anyway. And then what most of your money is going in to pay for the building and then also to pay for the developer's profit. So really, when you break down what that money is actually buying you, it's buying a very tiny piece of land, but it's buying a brand new building. Now, a building is exactly like a car, you know, it's a brand new Audi, but that Audi won't look brand new in 5 years, you know, there'll be newer Audis. And so the price, that building depreciates extremely quick, you know. If you think about it like an oven, you know, the developer buys the oven at, say, $600, he sells it to you for $900, okay, because he's making his profit. But as soon as you move into that place and you throw a chicken in there, that oven's only worth $300 because it's now a used oven. And that example applies to absolutely everything. The light switches, the roof, the tiles, the kitchen bench, the flooring, the windows, every single thing in that building is now used and it's getting older every year. So that's why, you know, you've got to be really careful. When you do the numbers, it doesn't make sense.
That's a lasting image in my mind. I chuck a chicken in the oven and it halves in value. I love it.
Yeah, okay. No spices on the chicken either, because then that smells the building
even
out.
More. It drops even more.
We'll include some links in the show notes and also a video that Veronica has made about trusted sources for property advice.
Please join us for our next episode when we're answering the big question that everybody's asking, which is, what is going to happen to the property market in 2019. Now, if you've been watching the news, you think it's all going to fall off a cliff. But is that really true? And is everything going down? Well, we'll answer that. And I think you might be a bit surprised at some of the insights.
Don't forget we're on all the social channels. We're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Twitter.
Or you can connect with us on theelephantintheroom.com.au. The links are all there for you.
Please connect and send us a message. We'd love to hear from you.
The Elephant in the Room property podcast is recorded at the Sydney Sound Brewery. This week's podcast was recorded by John Risk, editorial by Gordy Fletcher.
Until next week, don't be a Dumbo.
Now remember, everything we talked about on this podcast is general in nature and should never be considered to be personal financial advice. If you're looking to get advice, please seek the help of a licensed financial advisor or buyer's agent who will tailor and document their advice to your personal circumstances with a statement of advice.